guys got this. It's a cinch, okay? Just let the training kick in.
And maybe just try to enjoy it.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Sweet Smell of Succession, an unofficial podcast about the HBO original series Succession. I'm David Chen, and joining me as always, she is editor-at-large at primetimer.com and the co-host of Extra Hot Great, Tara Ariano. Tara, how goes it today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing well, although, as you know, there was a spill of an unknown substance in my driveway.
Yeah.
Which I am having to deal with today, and I don't know what it was, except that it is absolutely foul. So that's kind of harshing my vibe today, but besides that, eager to dive into this week's episode of Succession, Season 2, Episode 9, entitled DC. Tara, only two episodes remain of Succession this season, as well as our podcast about it. You can find more episodes of this show at successionpodcast.com. Email us at successionpodcast@gmail.com. Tara, curious, you know, as somebody who is a veteran of covering television, like, I feel like the Succession recap podcasts / write-ups have kind of exploded this year. I think as a result of a variety of factors, one being season one was really good, and now like people know that like it's a known quantity, and also there needed to be something to fill the void in the absence of Game of Thrones. But what do you think about the Succession culture that has sprung up in season two?
Well, I think Succession kind of snuck up on a lot of people last year. It was a slow burn. We've discussed how I didn't totally get it at first, and I had to take another run at it after watching just the series premiere at your recommendation. Took a run at season one. And I think a lot of outlets probably, if it wasn't really on their radar and they didn't have the infrastructure set up to cover it, like by the unless you're really on it right away, I can say as an editor of a culture website, like it's not really worth it to start getting in depth on it in like episode four. So I think it's a combination of a lot of people heard good buzz, watched season one, and then when season two came along, all of these media outlets were like on it. And yeah. I mean, you know, The Ringer, has, you know, what, as they disclose in every article that they do on Succession, they do, HBO has a financial investment in The Ringer. So, you know, that might be part of it. But Vulture is covering Succession, I feel like, just as much as it ever did Game of Thrones. And part of it, too, is that it's such catnip for media people because it's about them, you know, if the people that are actually writing about it are like on a lower level and will never ever meet, you know, the plutocrats that control their lives.
We are so happy to be a part of the recapping of Succession Season 2 and eager to dive into this episode. But before we get into Season 2, Episode 9, DC, we always like to follow up from last week. And we had a lot of fun talking about Season 2, Episode 8. But it's been such a joy to see the world react to Kendall Roy's rap in season two, episode eight. I mean, it is a singular moment in time that unites everyone. It's like watching the moon landing. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like you were united with everyone when the moon landing occurred.
I mean, I would say it's more like watching the Challenger explosion, but yes.
Yeah, perhaps so. And to that end, I did want to give a shout out to Miles Suri, who wrote a piece for TheRinger.com entitled "The Definitive Analysis of Kendall Roy's Rap from Succession." Miles Suri apparently spent hours listening to the rap and wrote up exactly what was said in the rap and basically offers a moment-by-moment summary of the entire sequence, which is, I would argue, essential to understanding the Kendall Roy rap, which I know everyone wants to do. So I think it's a great piece. We'll link to it in the show notes.
Yeah, if you, those of you who didn't study English will not recognize a poetic analysis when you see it, but that's 100% what he did.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful, yeah. So great job, Miles. Appreciate it. All right, so let's get to some emails. Let's start with this email from Nikki in London in the United Kingdom. Nikki writes into successionpodcast@gmail.com. Hello, Dave and Tara. Big fan of the show and the podcast. Wanted to write in to express my ongoing confusion with you and Roy. In the last episode, Dundee, Ewan shares with Greg that he believes his brother Logan Roy is as bad as Hitler or something to that effect. If he truly meant a statement as strong as this, then why did he vote for Logan in the vote of no confidence against Logan in the first season? Surely that was the perfect opportunity to help remove Logan from his powerful position. If you voted for Logan out of loyalty and because deep down family matters more to him than the principles he seems to have, why is he threatening Greg to disinherit him if he continues to work for Logan? Surely he wouldn't punish his grandson so severely if family means so much to him. Are his actions meant to show that he's a hypocrite, a coward, spiteful? I really don't know what his overall motivations or intentions are. Would be great to hear your opinion on this character's behavior. So great question from Nikki about Ewan's seemingly contradictory actions. Tara, what do you make of Nikki's email here? What do you think about Ewan and whether his behavior is consistent?
Well, this is a very interesting question. Thank you, Nikki. I did say in the last episode that my problem with this moment was, you know, it was meant to be a statement of principle from Ewan, and in a sense it is, but at the same time, he's still using his money, which he got from Logan, basically, to control Greg. So, I do think that part of that whole scene is supposed to make him seem like a hypocrite, because he kind of is one. I mean, if he really wanted to not benefit from Logan's choices right. that he feels are immoral, that's an option that's available to him. He has not done that. But it's also possible that his thinking on Logan as a person has evolved since the vote. We don't know how much time has passed since that happened. And, you know, it.
But
it's
at least months, right? I think we can assume, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So I don't think that he necessarily voted for Logan out of loyalty precisely. But I would also say it's possible for someone to think family is important, because that can mean a lot of things, and that a relationship between brothers is not the same necessarily as the relationship between a grandfather and a grandson. And maybe Ewan's greater concern in terms of Greg working with Logan is that, let's all be real, Logan is a very bad man. He's making bad choices for the planet, but he's probably going to die soon. Whereas as long as Greg continues to work there, he's going to be continuing that work and to be implicated in it. And, you know, he doesn't say, as long as you're going to be inside Waystar, I intend you to try and steer this company in the right direction, because he knows that's not possible and that he can't demand that of Greg. So that, to me, that was more what that was about. It's like, this is a corrupt institution and you need to get out of it for your own sake.
Mm.
What did you think?
I think that's a great description of it, and I think I would just say it is difficult sometimes in a TV show to tell the difference between inconsistent characterization on the part of a storyteller and just depicting people as complicated.
Of course, that's a great point. Yes,
yeah. And it's difficult. Like, you literally don't know. Is it just like he's complicated? Like, he's not going to. He has certain people are complicated. They're self-contradictory. They have some priorities. They have some morals. Like, maybe Ewan wants to stop global warming, but he also doesn't want to throw his brother under the bus, metaphorically speaking, at the board meeting. But he's okay doing it with his nephew. You know, like it's all. Or it could just be, hey, Ewan is actually a storytelling device that they haven't put that much thought into. Like, that's another option. And it's difficult to know which is.
But it also could be, I mean, what Greg says afterwards is that I talked to my mother about it, and she said he changes his mind about stuff all the time, which is also true of people. Like, that's just true of human nature.
Yeah, indeed.
So. Yeah.
Okay, we had another email coming to successionpodcast@gmail.com from Alex from Boston, who wrote in about last week's episode. Quote, I've watched Kendall's rap at least a dozen times and counting. The earnestness of the scene, everyone's expressions, I love it all. Like one character said, my eyes are burning, but I cannot turn away. But something stuck out to me while watching the scene, specifically the Roy family's reactions to it. You notice Roman's thoroughly embarrassed, Shiv laughing hysterically, and Logan smiling ever so slightly, but nevertheless smiling. In that scene, you remember that behind all the conniving and backstabbing, the Roys are a family. The little brother's embarrassed beyond belief and maybe even a little bit jealous for not coming up with it on his own. The sister is pleasantly hysterical, and the father mildly impressed, if not at least amused, and possibly even proud of his son. For a moment, we step away from the machinations of an empire and see the quirky inner workings of a family. I found the scene really refreshing and even humbling. Anyway, end quote. So that's Alex's email from Boston. Tara, what do you think? Is the rap scene very sweet window into this family's inner workings? What do you think?
That was not my read. I feel like the thing to remember is that even though, I mean, obviously we at home are watching this scene, but what's important to remember is that the people in the room are also watching this scene. So, you know, we already know, we've seen through this season that Logan knows when to turn it on in order to put on a good face and act in a way that's publicly acceptable. And if Logan seemed faintly amused, I mean, I didn't see that. But if he was, I feel like that was for the benefit of his guests at this party he didn't want. You know?
Yeah.
I don't think he thinks that Kendall's rap is great. I don't necessarily think he's touched by it. I don't think that Roman imagines that he could have done it. I mean, this is not Roman's way. He's not a spotlight guy. He's a snipe from the sidelines guy. And Shiv laughing hysterically, I did think that was an honest reaction, because all of us were laughing hysterically too when we weren't covering our eyes and screaming. But it's nice that Alex had this experience of thinking that this was just a nice family goofing around at a party.
I mean, here's the thing about the Kendall Roy rap. So I have a coworker at work who sits in the desk next to mine, who I shall remain nameless, but she does listen to this podcast, and we talk about Succession a lot, and I enjoy discussing it with her. And she made some observations about the Kendall Roy rap. I mean, I think the Kendall Roy rap is one of those, as we've already said, like singular moments of television. Like, you remember what you were doing when that happened. Mm-hmm. You know, people will watch it dozens of times. They've mm-hmm. already studied it, and that's only in the last week, right?
So, yeah. If this episode had aired in August, there would have been a spoof of it at the Emmys.
Yes,
100%.
For sure. So, at the same time that it is like an amazing moment of television that we all got to experience together, it doesn't really make that much sense from a story perspective. Like, when was Kendall writing this rap? You know, when did he hook up with DJ Squiggles? And, like, was it after his dad subjected him to the horror of the family that he's had manslaughtered their son? You know what I mean? Like,
right.
It just is like, okay, at no point in the entire season did Kendall demonstrate that he had the kind of, I don't know, mental... he was in the emotional place to write and execute a rap like this.
Here's a counterpoint.
Yes, counterpoint me.
Kendall does tons of coke. When you're on coke, you're up a lot. You're awake in the wee hours. You have nothing but time that you can fill doing whatever you think is a good idea. Even if in your sober mind, you would look at it and say, this is a bad idea. When you're on coke, you think, this has to happen. I have to do it.
Well,
and I feel like if Kendall had written this at some point, I mean, you know, it seems like the party was sprung on him. That's the only thing that makes me think that it, you know, he hasn't been sitting on this in a drawer for a long time.
Yeah.
Because Rhea planned the party, which means that the party only came together like sometime within the last couple of weeks or so. Which that part of it is a great point. I mean, I didn't even really think of it in terms of like the humiliation of taking him to the waiter's house.
Yeah.
But you know, again.
But I think that cocaine is a great point. Cocaine enables you to do all. It enables you to overcome all kinds of obstacles. So, at least in the realm of TV storytelling. So
turn off your inner critic, as it were.
My colleague from work also mentioned that the fact that Kendall had just done the rap made it doubly humiliating that he broke up with that actress.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
he was doing this horrendous rap, and then like the fact that she said awesome a couple times, that's what set him off. Anyway.
Right.
I thought that was an interesting observation as well.
So. That is a great point. He's lucky that she stayed. Like, she could have walked out in the middle of that. No one would have blamed her.
Well, can you imagine, Tara, like, someone doing that and then saying that you're not good enough for them? You know what I mean? Like, that's just the ultimate humiliation.
Yeah.
One other thing I wanted to mention about last week's episode, which is in last week's episode of the podcast, we talked about how, hey, we've had like three episodes now of them just going someplace or going to mm-hmm. different places. And I wanted them to get kind of back into the corporate machinations, which they certainly did in season 2, episode 9, this week's episode. Mm-hmm. But I was reading the Vox recap of last week's episode, and it said basically that the travels are essentially a way for all the characters to be in one location. Because
right.
otherwise, there's no reason for all these characters to be in one place.
Right.
And I didn't even think about that. Because, like, are you, like, with your entire family all the time? Like, that almost never happens. Or, you know, if you're an adult, it rarely happens, right? So, mm-hmm. Anyway, thought that was a cool observation and wanted to point it out. And, like, one thing I enjoy doing on these TV podcasts is thinking through, like, what are the tricks or the mechanics that storytellers use to kind of accomplish what they're trying to do, accomplish. And having a party is one of them, as is having a congressional testimony. So season 2, episode 9, DC, that's this week's episode. Before we dive into the recap, overall thoughts on the episode?
I mean, we'll get into all of it, I guess. But yeah, this was a tough one to watch. This more than any other, probably since the season 1 premiere, is the one that makes it hardest for me to argue to you, as I have tried to in the past, that this show is a dark comedy, because this is just pure darkness. And I feel like the Shiv hive of, like, this is a Shiv Roy fan account, which I've seen one of those follows me on Twitter. Shout out to you. I assume you listen to this podcast. This is going to be a moment for those people that it's sort of like Daenerys, you know, burning the city at the end of Game of Thrones in the second last episode, where it's like, oh, she wasn't what we thought she was. Like, she's not our queen. She's actually a terrible person.
Well, I'm kind of curious. I don't know. I may dispute your assessment there, but we'll see. We'll see.
Okay.
I think one thing I want to point out is that this is the third show that showrunner Jesse Armstrong has been involved in that features an episode whose primary focus is testimony in front of members of Parliament or Congress.
Right.
The other two series being The Thick of It and Veep. And I think this kind of rounds out a really nice trilogy, because in each of those other shows, the approach that they took is really different. I think in The Thick of It, it was season 4. In Veep, it was one of the later seasons where they did the congressional testimony. And, like, I just find it fascinating because I don't know that Jesse Armstrong was involved in every single one of those, because I don't know that I don't think he was, but, like, that they managed to have kind of a different take. Each one of these series manages to have a different take on this sequence, right? And what is the feel of it, what occurs in it, like the end result of it. And so just wanted to shout out to The Thick of It, which is on Hulu, and also Veep, which is on HBO as well, that these are great shows. And this episode, which had, like, the centerpiece of which is, like, congressional testimony, I found to be pretty compelling overall. And I agree, Shiv has some big moves that she makes at the end as well. So, like, overall, I was a fan of this episode and appreciated it. So let's dive in. What happens in season 2, episode 9, Tara?
Okay. Weisel, the whistleblower, continues to cause problems for the Roys, as we see when all the dudes in the family assemble for a viewing party. He's being interviewed on this universe's equivalent of 60 Minutes. Among the cover-up conspirators he names are a lot of people we would expect: Lester, a.k.a. Mo, Jerry, Tom's old boss Bill, Kendall, and Tom himself. The top team has set up a war room elsewhere in the penthouse to prepare their public defense, but this might not be a problem they can solve with talking points. Shiv arrives to deliver the bad news that Gil is probably going to hold a hearing. Gil Evis, the presidential candidate, her old boss. Rhea arrives not long after that. She can tell Logan's attempt to appear unruffled is a total fraud and sees right through his denials that he knew any of this was coming. Rhea is also clearly terrified about what's coming next, but sticks her face in to try to project bravado. Basically, it's a lot of posturing on everyone's part, and it convinces no one. Only Jerry actually seems confident and prepared, and she lays out a pretty solid strategy.
I think we say the truth. That the senior cadre here and the family knew nothing of this.
Mm-hmm.
So we throw Mo overboard. Mo, bad apple. Jim Weasel, bad apple. Spies a book deal. Sotto voce, backed by Sandy and Stewie. All corporate fuckery, no real concern. And in terms of historic shit, I'm afraid we give up Bill. Because he should have let us know what he discovered, rather than clean up without telling us the details. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's going to be paper that shows anything beyond Bill.
I'll start with a kind of frivolous note. I was so happy that the news magazine segment felt real because one of my biggest peeves on bad movies and bad TV is when actors are playing reporters or civilian interview subjects and they overact in a way that just takes you out of it because they're so actory.
It is a real hit or miss situation when you have news segments on other shows, like fake news segments. It can often be truly terrible. And in this case, it was completely fine.
Yeah, it's as flat as it would be in real life, you know, like everyone is directed very well.
I remember, Tara, some of the earlier episodes of Extra Hot Great, which is Tara's very good TV podcast.
Thank you.
That I think you used to have a segment called I Am Not a Crackpot, right?
Oh, yeah, we still do it sometimes.
Oh, you still do it sometimes. Okay, yeah. So I've listened to recent episodes, too. I haven't heard it in a while. And you know, that's when, like, it was in those segments when I would find, like, my, you know, kindred spirits of, like, things they do on TV shows. So, like, things they do on TV shows, like, whenever you see a coffee cup, it's completely empty. Like, it's just, like, maddening, right, to see, like, on TV, like, on shows, they have coffee, people are drinking coffee, but they're drinking out of empty cups, and it looks fake. And they do it for production reasons, but it looks terrible, and it always rips me out of the scene. That's one of them. TV newscaster, fake TV newscasters, another one. Another one would be like whenever they like pan to show like a person's personal effects and there's like photos of them as a kid and the Photoshop is always terrible.
Oh, yeah.
You know, those are things that rip me out of TV shows. And fortunately, it did not rip me out in this case. The TV newscast was completely competent, in my opinion.
Yep. Yeah. Agreed. So one of the things we learn in this segment to downshift to the less frivolous is that the official notation in paperwork about catastrophes that would happen on cruises was NRPI, which is an abbreviation for no real person involved. Holy shit. So chilling. Such a dark, dark way to start the episode.
Yeah. And plausible, too, you know, in terms of
completely. That's what makes it so dark.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah.
Yeah. So Logan rages that Sandy is backing Weisel. I personally still think it's Ewan, and that's going to be the big finale reveal.
We will see. I didn't even think about Sandy because he had basically been taken out of the mix because of his syphilis. but who knows? Who knows?
Right. I also was straight up shocked by the size of Logan's living room television. I realized as I was writing it out, it's possible that it's only brought out for special occasions. So it's small because it's normally like stored in a closet, but it's about the size of the TV in my bedroom, not to brag. Like, man, you work in the industry, treat yourself to a real TV.
I agree. The TV looks really bad. And I, you know, it hasn't been until I've gotten older, Tara, that like when I was younger, when I was a young man, it's like, I want to get the largest TV possible.
Yeah.
And like, get the largest TV possible in the living room. And then when you get older and you marry somebody who is much more elegant than you are, you realize that some people don't actually want to have a TV as a centerpiece of their living room, right? Mm-hmm. And there's actually many TVs out, like that are coming out in the near future that have features that allow you to hide the TV. Like there's a TV that like roll like unfurls like a scroll and you can hide it otherwise. And so I think for the Roys, like they would, it would make sense that they wouldn't have a TV in their living room because it's too unrefined to do so. And so, yeah, they might just, it might just be something they keep in the closet and bring out on special occasions.
I will say one of the first really wealthy people that I ever met, a friend of my parents, lived on the Upper East Side of New York, like the Roys. They did not have a whole penthouse, but they had a TV that was built into a cabinet and it would rise up out of the cabinet on a remote control. And I thought that was pretty cool. But I mean, you know, obviously, you know, I love TV. I can't have it hidden away. I need to have access TV now. I have a TV on my desk while we're recording this. It is on.
You're
mute,
like watching. You're watching
there.
CNN right now as we're talking, right?
Yeah, no, it's not. It's on whatever channel mom was on earlier. But yeah. I like TV is the point. I did also like after the open and occasionally profane animosity that Shiv was throwing at Rhea in Dundee. At this point, they've both decided that they have to be adults and have a civil working relationship. Not that they're going to have to keep it up for long. Spoiler alert. But I did think Shiv was very bratty to Rhea. So it made sense to me that she would like tone it down at this point.
Agreed. Agreed.
So almost everyone is going to DC for the hearings. Marcia isn't, and in fact, no one may know where she is. Roman asks Logan if she's upstairs or something, concerned that Logan has someone he can talk to about his current troubles, but Logan doesn't volunteer her whereabouts. The other person not going
That's
to...
That's a very mild way of describing Logan saying, you know, you may want to fuck your mom, but I don't have that problem.
Yeah. Well, I was getting that. It's later in the doc, but yes.
Yeah.
That's the short version. The other person not going to DC is Roman himself. Logan assigns him to hit up Edward for enough money to take the company private in case things continue going south with the shareholders, and to take Laird and Carl with him. Roman ends up giving his pitch to Edward and his father in a hotel suite in Turkey, where an investment conference is taking place, but he gets interrupted by some guys with guns who separate Roman from his security guard and confiscate everyone's phones, then hold all the conference participants in the hotel hostage in a ballroom downstairs. It's unclear exactly what is going on. Edward says they're a political party of sorts acting to combat corruption, and at various times, Edward and his father are led away before getting returned, apparently safely. It seems like the Waystar Azerbaijan deal is on, but when the episode ends, we still don't know Roman's fate. And I'll just straight up admit it. I don't know if it's because I'm too dumb or if it's the show's fault for making it too boring or opaque, but I did not really get what was happening with this plot line at all. At some points, I thought the terrorists were theater that were arranged by Edward to help make a more favorable deal. But by the end, it seemed like it was real. And also, Edward and his dad seemed to be the targets, given Laird's attempt to explain Turco-Azerbaijani relations to Roman in the car in Scotland earlier. But I seriously don't know.
I agree. I thought it was pretty confusing. And I think the problem they ran into with this whole sequence is that you don't know, like, Edward is an unreliable narrator. And so you don't know if at any point what he's saying is complete bullshit. I think they really needed somebody to actually describe with no bullshit what was actually happening. And because you didn't have that, everything that Edward says is either the truth or lies or a mix of the two. You just don't even know. By the end, as far as I know. But I think one part of this that was pretty impactful was that the show did a great job of convincing you that anything could happen and that Roman's life might actually be in danger. The show rarely uses danger as a storytelling device. But when it does, I find it pretty effective. The only other time I can remember is like in the season finale of season one, Kendall was driving in the car with that guy and that guy said, maybe I should kidnap you. And I was like, is that where this is going? Like Kendall's going to be kidnapped and that's like season one cliffhanger. Because that was possible. Like maybe he would have been taken to that guy's friend's house and they all jumped him or whatever. But yeah, like these characters are rarely in danger, but when they are, it's generally kind of life or death. And I think it's it makes for it was effective on me. Like I felt like everything was at risk. So
that's funny because I don't actually I think when the next episode starts, Roman will be fine and they're not even going to explain how.
Oh, I agree. No, I agree with that. I'm just saying like I felt for a split second like, maybe something bad could happen to Roman, you know?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. I mean, it seemed like mostly they were just bored. The one thing that struck me actually is when they stand him up to go for his turn with, you know, the intruders or political party or whatever. That he's, I was like, where are the sweat stains in his pits? Like, he seems totally, he doesn't seem like he's like hot or uncomfortable at all. I don't know. I did, maybe it's because over the holidays, I saw a movie called Bel Canto with Julianne Moore that was all about a hostage situation like this in Latin America. And that, but that was like a whole movie and that was all it was about. So this seemed, you know, this seemed like the little Archie version of that to me, kind of. But anyway, to back up, more references to the Roman-Jerry dynamic. First, Logan dismisses the idea of talking to a therapist, sternly joking that he doesn't want to sleep with his mother. He doesn't know about Roman. And when the Waystar hostages are playing Fuck, Marry, Kill to pass the time, Laird says he would fuck Jerry, and Roman way overacts how gross a prospect he supposedly thinks that is.
Yeah, my favorite part of this is when Roman's like, ew, gross, and then he's like super hot, like just for like a split second. That was very funny. Yeah, was and but also like this episode shows that Roman can be competent, you know? He actually did a decent job selling the situation he's trying to sell.
Yeah.
So he is slowly becoming a real boy.
He is. I would say he's possibly saved from having to deliver specifics he doesn't know by this hostage situation arising. Because they're like, you know, don't you have a lot of debt? And he's like, no, I'm totally confident that we will be able to manage that. Like, he is not, and he doesn't know how they would do that.
Yeah.
So if they had any follow-up questions, he would have been fucked. But Anyway, let's go back to our titular location, which is DC. Since the plan is to blame everything on Bill, the first Waystar witnesses, Jerry and Tom, supported by Greg and Shiv, are very alarmed to come down a staircase and see that Bill is there. He hasn't been called to testify. He's just there to support his old team. When he's left to find a seat, they all agree that's very nice of him, but also he's still going to be their scapegoat. Most of the episode is taken up with testimony, which is hard to summarize for our purposes, but full of great lines and a great performance by Matthew McFadden, making Tom, due to his nerves, more idiotic than he ever has been before. Gil catches him in a lie about Lester's nickname, Mo. Tom reflexively lies about knowing who Greg is when Greg is sitting directly behind him and is also his wife's cousin. And Gil knows all about the boxes of paperwork that no longer exist to be subpoenaed after something happened to their contents last Thanksgiving, something Jerry, sitting next to Tom, can truthfully say she knows nothing about. Jerry, the cockroach, once again. Mm. Gil also brings up the practice of footstooling at ATN, which we know from Safe Room. The rest of the top team watching the broadcast is, to say the least, unimpressed by Tom's performance.
What is it like to be married to a man with two assholes?
If I was to give Tom a letter grade, I'd give him a B plus for bad plus terrible.
Afterward, Tom is upset that he seems to be the scapegoat and doesn't even trust that Shiv hasn't participated in setting him up. Greg is even more hysterical. He just gave up his inheritance to stay at the company, and now he's pretty sure he's going to prison forever. I kind of love Tom and Connor's earlier condescension about Greg's happiness about the $5 million he knows he definitely will still inherit from Ewan's estate, since it's too much for you to need to work but not actually enough to retire on. We know Connor has grown up with unimaginable wealth, but Tom didn't, and he sure has gotten comfortable in his position quickly, which I assume is why he keeps putting up with Shiv's shit, even though he knows he can't really trust her.
Let me just say a few things here. First of all... I actually think it is possible to retire on $5 million.
For sure it is.
Just not at the level of lifestyle that these people are used to, I think.
No, but I thought about that too. Like, even if you're like living on $100,000 a year, like that's extremely comfortable. That's way more than the median income for a household in this country.
Yes,
way more.
Yes. So, but still funny to hear them complain about that amount of money being super low. Tom testimony I thought was actually pretty excellent. Just seeing them, like Gil Evis, completely dismantle him, and you the way Tom reacts is very in keeping with his character. I just loved all that stuff with Tom getting completely taken out to the woodshed.
Yeah, that's what's interesting about these episodes that are all testimony is that how they reveal character.
Yeah.
Because people always go in with a game plan.
Yep.
Of how they're going to solve it, and it never works out the way they think.
Agreed.
I mean, I guess I shouldn't say never, because Jerry and later Kendall do great. Mm. We also find out in a break that Connor's fucking presidential campaign has fans. They call themselves con heads. I hate it.
It's the succession equivalent of the Yang Gang, I think.
I hate that too.
Well, fair enough. But anyway, before we, speaking of people we don't hate.
Yeah.
Kickstarter backers. The people who made it possible for us to do this podcast. We want to thank a few of them this episode. This is the last batch of names. So if we get to the end of this batch and we have not read your name, email us at successionpodcast@gmail.com and say, hey, you didn't read my name, and then we'll get to your name. So and this is, by the way, for people who backed us at the $11 tier and then, you know, submitted their name for us to read. So I want to thank Vijay Varman, Tyler, Ed Perillon, Percival Buenaventura, Madhu Ganesh, and Joey Rolu.
Thank you so much to all of
Rolo?
You.
Rolo? Sorry. I'm sorry if I got
that wrong.
I think
it's Rulo.
Rulo.
Joey Rulo.
Yes, Rulo. I apologize. Joey Rulo. I should have given you that one, Tara.
I would also like to thank, in addition to all of those people, thank you so much, Ashley Barrow, or possibly Barrett, Travis, Kirsten Zolfo, and my dear Joe Reed. Thank you all so much.
Yeah, it's been so much fun to do this podcast this year with Tara, and we couldn't have done it without the Kickstarter backers to help us out. And so we really appreciate it. And I will say that if we do this podcast again, we'll probably launch a Kickstarter whenever season 3 of Succession happens. And so you should keep out. If you miss your chance to support us this time, another opportunity will arise. But thanks to everyone who did it this time around. You guys are awesome, and we recognize many names who have supported us over the years, so thank you so much.
Thank you so much. So, after Tom's testimony, Shiv tries to go to Gil's office to broker some kind of deal, but whatever collegiality she, Gil, and Nate used to have is gone now. She does learn that they have another bombshell witness set to testify later in the week. Her name is Kira. She can corroborate Weisel's claims as a victim. And if she talks, Jerry Feeler's other NDAs will domino. Logan tasks Rhea and Shiv to track her down and try to buy her off while he and Kendall take their turn as witnesses. And also we see Naomi is there to support Kendall as well, but we don't hear from her. Yeah, she's back. Logan reads his statement off an iPad unconvincingly. Kendall is more effective, countering Gil's insinuations about Logan running a for-profit news organization by saying the U.S., unlike China or Russia, doesn't have state media. And Jerry thrills to get such a great line to disseminate to Waystar surrogates. When Gil starts questioning exactly what Logan may have known when, Logan starts kind of losing the thread, repeating himself and finally shrugging that the person in charge during the period they're talking about was actually Kendall, so they should talk to him. And I had kind of expected Logan to show up in his twinkly grandpa mode like we saw at that very first secret meeting with Rhea in Safe Room. And I can't tell if he doesn't because he can't. Like maybe he seems scattered because he's sundowning. Even though when we saw him totally in control the night of the TV interview with Weisel, that was much later in the day. But I kind of wonder if Logan's faking some kind of age-related cognitive impairment to keep the heat off himself, though at the same time, I don't think he would willingly do anything to make himself seem weak to the public. Because if what he mostly wants out of his position at this point is power more than money, pretending to be senile doesn't serve his aims. But I had a lot of feelings about when he's sort of loses his ability to answer a question at that moment.
I didn't really, senility wasn't what I sensed. It was just kind of like he simply didn't have the energy or the wherewithal to deliver the performance that was expected of him at that moment. I didn't necessarily think senility though was the culprit, but maybe it was. Maybe it was. We don't know. I hope we learn more about Logan's mental condition in the finale episode.
Yeah. So after Logan throws him under the bus, Kendall does exactly what we would all expect. He interrupts the proceedings to deliver a fiery monologue about how upstanding Logan is and accuse Gil of acting out of bias against Logan's business successes. Daddy's boy strikes again, and it's not worth clipping, making audio of it, but Mr. Roberts, the very friendly, clearly drunk senator who's taken a Bright Star cruise with his wife, was a very funny touch, I thought.
I think this was great. I mean, I think like modern day Republicans on these congressional testimony, you know, in these scenarios defy parody, but this is pretty close to being a solid parody
of
what that looks like. Yeah,
it was like drunk Lindsey Graham.
Indeed. And I thought Kendall did a great job. He was the only one who really followed Fisher Stevens' advice, which is basically, delay, stall, keep the conversation on your terms, take control.
Right.
He did well. He continues to do well when he's not rapping L to the OG.
Yeah, it's kind of funny how Hugo, the Fisher Stevens character, initially was presented as kind of an idiot, but as the episodes have gone on, we see, oh, he actually does know what he's doing. He's competent.
I was never as harsh on him as you were in the early episodes. I agree he wasn't like, he didn't strike me as impressive early on, but like, I agree that he has gotten better as time has gone on. So.
Well, I think at first it might have just been like he's so nervous. He was just totally like a sycophant that was not really adding any value and was getting dismissed by people like Jerry and me. On their way to the meet, Rhea tells Shiv it doesn't feel great. Shiv is insulted that Logan would send them to do the soft skills, lady duty shit work, but apparently she's misinterpreted the part where Rhea feels this meeting, regardless of who goes, is morally dubious. So she's surprised when the car arrives at the playground where Kira is waiting to hear Rhea declare she's not going to talk to her. Rhea points out to Shiv that she doesn't have to do it either. Shiv replies that Kira's testimony could destroy Shiv's family's company. So actually, she does.
This was a little bit melodramatic to me, right? I mean, I don't know if that's fair to say as a put down for the show, but I mean, the idea that Rhea would be undecided on whether she's going to go and then like wimp out at the last minute, it felt kind of theatrical to me. Like, up until this point, I feel like the show has done a good job of conveying Rhea as like a pretty smooth operator, a cool cucumber. And growing a conscience at the sight of when they're supposed to confront this person just felt a little bit, you know, melodramatic, a little bit theatrical to me. What did you feel about her suddenly growing a conscience at the last second?
I bought it. I mean, I think that we'll definitely have more to say about Rhea and her part in this company, you know, later on in this episode of the podcast. But my feeling was, you know, she accepted the CEO job without knowing everything. We know that. This was what she was driving for. She got it. And then she realized, oh, it's a shit sandwich. And everybody knew that except for me. Mm. Like they're handing me this poison chalice. They want me to be the fall guy. I'm supposed to be the person that, you know, a fourth metaphor, I guess I could put here. But like she, I think when she thought that this was where she might want to jump to, it seemed exciting. It was different. It would be a challenge. It's like different from Pierce, which is like so patrician. It's like old money, but she just thought the Roys were going to be capitalists the way the Pierces are capitalists, where they're faintly embarrassed about their money. They do a lot of, you know, very laudable charity donations to try to get the guilt off it, because the Pierces have like old time robber baron money. Like if their legacy is 150 years, this is as old as money gets in this country, pretty much. And so she didn't anticipate that she was going to actually come into a company where like they were literally killing people on their cruises and now are trying to close ranks and stop it coming out rather than actually trying to deal with the rot in an honest way, or as honest as is possible in a situation like this. And so I think for her, like, I do buy that it's possible in the car. She made the choice. She made the decision. Like, she thought it through and was like, I can't do this. Like, I'm going to take the ride, but I'm not going to participate in this. And I have to quit.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
So Shiv heads straight for Kira. And after an awkward false start, she explains why she's there. Shiv supports Kira. Shiv wants Kira to testify because Shiv intends to destroy the men who victimized her, and she needs Kira to help her. The reason Shiv's pitch works is that it is largely truthful. Kira has already experienced a few days of what life is like for a woman trying to take down a powerful man, threatening messages and even in-person visitors that have left her feeling unsafe. Shiv points out that if she testifies, she will be identified with her role in the hearings for the rest of her life, but things could go a different way. The Roys could give her millions of dollars. She could write a book about her experiences. She could help Shiv clean up cruises. Kira asks if she can trust Shiv, and Shiv is even honest about that.
No. No, actually, no. Kira, you're in a shitstorm of conflicting interests here. You can't trust anyone. You just have to be smart. Just listen to everyone and make an assessment. Because, frankly, I want what's best for me. But the other people, the folks who want you to get up there tomorrow and get pulled apart, they want what's best for them. You need to think about what's best for you. Huh?
So basically, I mean, we have a more recent example of a whistleblower story currently happening in the news right now. But this specifically is the Christine Blasey Ford story, and it is really fucking grim.
Yeah, Shiv's description of like what would happen to her if she testified is frighteningly plausible, and we've seen it basically play out in a similar fashion already. So really upsetting.
Yeah, and Kira knows while she's saying it that everything she's telling her is the truth, and like there's no good way out for her. Her decision is do I do the right thing for the sake of other people who aren't in my position, or do I think about my own family, one of whom is like here on this playground with me right now?
Yeah.
I also thought Shiv taking off her heels on the playground as a show of authenticity, which was also very calculated, was a great moment. Like, but doing both of those things at once, I thought was very smart.
So one of the things I really liked about this scene is we've seen versions of this scene before, like, I'm the only one you can trust, you know, like,
yeah.
But what's great about it is Shiv says, actually, don't trust me, because you can't, because you should really question whether you should trust anyone. And she's just very straightforward about that. And I like that touch about it. But it seems like when we talked about this earlier on, like, you don't believe Shiv is actually incensed about this and going to fix the problem, right? Like,
no.
You think she's saying literally anything she can just to defuse the Kira situation, right?
Yes, she needs her goal in this conversation is to make Kira not testify.
Right, right. So you don't think that once Shiv rises to power that she will take a hacksaw to certain parts of the organization?
Maybe, but you know, we've seen no evidence of her having enough guts to do that.
All right.
Like, so far, all we've seen her do is go along with what Logan wants. Like, this was the same debate we had over whether they should buy Pierce, right? Like, what it showed us about Shiv's principles or lack thereof. Like, the thing about a con is that you tell as much of the truth as you can.
Yeah.
In order to sell the lie. Like, she's just really a great liar.
Well, if that is, in fact, what happened in this scene, then I agree with you. It's super dark.
Yeah.
But if Shiv is telling some truth that she will, in fact, reform things, then maybe she's just showing that she could be a better leader. I don't know. Either way, I think between this and also maneuvering Rhea into eating a shit sandwich, Shiv has demonstrated a lot of skills these last couple episodes. So,
yeah. Yeah, but the question is, like, are these skills that a person should be admired for having?
Indeed, indeed.
Right? So, but that's the question about this show in general.
Yes, yes. So what happens at the end of this episode?
So, I mean, Shiv pulls it off. That evening, the Waystar crew is celebrating. Kendall and Shiv have put the company on a path out of this scandal. Bill implies to Logan that he has the diaries to write a book about his time at the company, but for now, at least, he doesn't have the time. Rhea pulls Logan aside, however, for a private conversation. She wants to make sure he knows she didn't participate in manipulating Kira, and she wants to know everything about the scandal. Logan says she can ask him anything, but she rightly points out that that's not helpful, since she wouldn't know what to ask. He doesn't understand what she's getting at, so she has to be absolutely clear. She's out.
I don't want to be part of this.
Oh, come on. Fuck off. Little Miss Prim, you knew. You know who I am.
I think it's changed. In the details.
You don't walk over details.
I can't see the bottom of the pool. And I don't know if you care about anything. And that scares me.
Oh, yeah. Fucking words. Fuck. Fucking words. Come on. Stay. I can always find someone else. You know, you're fungible.
I am not fungible.
Oh, yes, you are. You're as fungible as fuck.
Fine. Then plunge me.
Man, my takeaway from this conversation is how sneaky it is for someone who's lying to you to say, ask me anything. It is, I will never trust it again. It is such a smart way to continue keeping damaging secrets while appearing to be transparent. But also, and this is getting back to, you know, Rhea's motivations and how she ended up here. This is what I've been waiting for. Someone who actually does believe in something and is not presented as being ridiculous for it. It's just too bad that Rhea already probably ruined her life thinking that she could outsmart Logan.
Yeah, it was pretty great to see someone call out Logan's nonchalant lying for what it is, which is like pathological behavior.
Yeah.
It's not something we see happen very often. It almost felt like a meta commentary, to be honest with you, like on this, what great skill is required to act. It's like you have these two actors talking to each other who are, you know, great talents. And one of them's like, it must take a lot of skill to like say something as though it's actually true when it's not, you know, like, and I was like, oh, nice little meta commentary on what acting's like, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So again, we have a situation where Logan assumes A, everyone has a price because B, everyone is corrupt as he is. Unfortunately, almost every time we've seen that that's true, but Nan Pierce said no and Rhea said no.
Indeed. Indeed.
So our last scene goes to Logan and Shiv. She seems to think they're safe. Logan doesn't think the aggressive tone Kendall took in his testimony is going to play with the shareholders, though. He's pretty sure he's going to have to make a blood sacrifice to get past the scandal. Whose blood will be spilled? We will have to find out next week. But, I mean, this seems like a good place to place our bets. Who is your pick for the likeliest blood sacrifice?
So what is implied by blood sacrifice is that it's got to be someone high up and important.
Yeah, right? Bill doesn't have enough juice to be the scapegoat.
Bill doesn't have enough juice, and probably that other dude, Bill. I'm sorry, not you just said Bill. The Fisher Stevens character, right? Like,
oh, Hugo.
Hugo. He's probably not high enough either, right?
Yeah.
So I'm going to say Kendall. I'm going to say Kendall. That like, hey, his dad still hasn't forgotten the betrayals from earlier, and that he's basically, you know, what they said in the first episodes of this season is like, hey, you know, dad's just going to use you up, and like once he's done with you, like spit you out, you know. And this is now we're at the end of it. We're at the spitting out part. So I predict Kendall. What say you, Tara?
I mean, whether he's blood or not is, you know, questionable. We've been calling him a royal season, but I think it's going to be Tom.
Hmm. All right. Well,
the only reason I would say against that is that would mean he would have to not be on the show anymore because he would no longer be married to Shiv. And I can't imagine anyone wants to lose him as a character.
Right.
But he was at Cruz's. He did know something. Greg has papers. He might use them. And he might use them in order to get back in with Ewan somehow. Like to say, see, I'm an upstanding person. I'm a whistleblower too. And also they can point to a pattern of behavior that Tom has, which was hinted at in his testimony, which is the bullying at ATN that made someone kill themselves.
I think you're right. Like it could very well be Tom. And I could see a scenario next season where either we're living with the aftermath of like that situation on their marriage or mm-hmm. like they get divorced and you like check in with Tom and he's living in, you know, a condo.
Not a condo.
or like, I don't know, an apartment in Chinatown or whatever. You know,
oh,
like,
God.
You know, like that would be very funny to like revisit Tom Wamsgams at like a different status of life. So
it's true because he wouldn't go to prison, right? But he also, we know he didn't sign he did sign the prenup. So he's not getting anything if they get divorced.
Yeah, yeah. So we'll see.
He wouldn't be able to get another job. He would be radioactive.
I pick Kendall, you pick Tom, and whichever one of us is right, that's who is better at recapping TV, Tara. So anyway, we'll see what happens.
Whoever
next
is
week.
Wrong gets poisonous, hazardous waste dumped on their driveway.
Yes, indeed. I think we already know actually who the winner and loser is. But speaking of winners and losers, every week on The Sweet Smell of Succession, we like to pick a winning Roy, a losing Roy, a winning non-Roy, and a losing non-Roy. We'll also pick a quote of the week. But let's start with winning Roy. Who do you think is the winning Roy this week?
This is an unconventional choice, but go with me. I'm going to say Connor. He's the only one of the Roy kids who is not touched by this. He has fans. We learned that at the hearing. And he says that tickets sales for Sands are ticking up because of the scandal. So he might actually not be too badly washed by the expense of putting on Willa's dumb play. I'm going to say Connor is my pick for this, as I've already said several times, very dark episode.
Mm. I'm going to go with Shiv because, as I said, not only was she able to defuse the Kira situation, she also basically put Rhea into a no-win situation and now is really well-positioned to potentially take the throne again if she wants it. But we'll see. We'll see who the blood sacrifices next week. Maybe Logan was talking about Shiv to her face. I don't know. But I think Shiv is the winning Roy. She has shown that she can manipulate along with the rest of them. And so she's my winning Roy of the week. Losing Roy of the week.
Shiv, she's shown she can manipulate with the rest of them. I feel like Shiv is at some point going to look back on this as a low moment in her life that she's not going to feel great about having done this.
I mean, I still believe that Shiv might actually do what she said, at least to some degree, you know, to Kira. But we'll see. We'll see. My losing Roy of the week is Tom. Because he is humiliated on a national stage and also much of his corporate malfeasance has been exposed and we don't even know what the consequences of that will be yet. So
it's true.
He's definitely
at least he gave
situation.
Us so much to laugh at, though. He really is very funny in this episode.
Agreed. Agreed. All right. Winning non-Roy. Winning non-Roy.
Rhea, she's going to get out before any of this sticks to her.
I agree. She was able to extricate herself in fairly clean fashion, and I think that's pretty good. Pretty good. Mm-hmm. So Rhea is my winning non-Roy as well. Losing non-Roy. Who's your losing non-Roy of the week?
It's probably going to be Kira. I don't necessarily trust Shiv to come through with any of the things that she promised her in exchange for not testifying. And in exchange for not testifying, she's going to have to live with this guilt for the rest of her life that she could have actually helped people that were like her in a horrible situation, literally out in the middle of the ocean with no safety and no one to speak for them. She could have done something and she didn't. And she will have to take that to her grave. Thanks, Shiv.
Wow. Pretty dark. I still think Shiv might do part of what she said. But... You know, given that that's an open possibility, I'm going to say losing non-Roy is actually the Nate Gill political team who divulged information to Shiv that she ended up using against them. That was a bad idea on their part. So
that's true.
Yeah. So they lost their ability to really take the screws to Logan and Kendall and all those people, and bad move on their part. So that's why they are my losing non-Roys, the Gill-Nate duo. So, all right. So those are our winners and losers. Every week, we also like to choose a quote of the week. Tara, what's your quote of the week?
It's sadly not as good a pun as Grexit last week.
Yeah.
But we get this quotation from Gil when he's reading back some of Tom's emails that he sent. Apparently something in the number of 60 emails to Greg, and so this is it. That was the only 2-hour period in which you did not send an email to Mr. Hirsch with the title, "You can't make a tomlet without breaking some Greggs." We never learn what that's about. It doesn't matter. It's so dumb. As soon as we hear it, I'm like, oh yeah, that's a Tom email for sure.
Well, my understanding is like that was, he sent those emails the night when Greg was shredding all the docs, right?
Oh, right. Of course.
Yeah. So yes. He was like reminding him, hey, you can't make a tomlet without breaking some Greggs. And that was the only moment in this episode that really felt like those other two series that I mentioned, Veep and The Thick of It,
mm-hmm.
where like there's something that ridiculous and outlandish and very, very funny. But yeah, great line. My line was them talking about how it's impossible to retire on $5 million. they say, you'll be the poorest rich person in America, the world's tallest dwarf, the weakest strong man at the circus. I have to say, this episode was a little bit short on amazing one-liners compared to other episodes this season. So like usually we're like overflowing with one-liners to choose from. This week had to look a little bit harder, but I feel strongly they'll bring them back in full force next week. So, okay, before we wrap up, Tara, question about like the finale. Like I still think there are many open plot lines to resolve this season. And I like what's going on with this Michelle Pansel biography?
Mm-hmm.
Are we going to see Marcia again? And what's like what plays out with her relationship with Logan?
Mm-hmm.
What happens with Stewie and the other guys attempted takeover of the company? You know, like the proxy battle.
Yep.
There's just a lot of things that I don't have confidence that they will resolve next week. But are there any plot lines that you're like, man, I really want to see how that ends next week?
Bring back Lawrence. That's the only person I
want to
see.
You want Lawrence to have his revenge, yeah?
I love Lawrence. I did not get enough Lawrence this season.
I can agree.
I think that's a great character. I love how much he hates Kendall. And I'm still a tiny part of me is hoping the Kendall manslaughter is going to somehow come out, even though I know it won't.
All right. Well, we'll see. We'll see. I'm kind of hoping all the things I just mentioned, like, are at least touched upon, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And of course, when he says blood sacrifice, like, they better resolve that or else I'll be pretty upset.
Oh,
Speaking of unresolved things, like, we had also mentioned last week, we're at his sister, right? Rose?
Yeah.
Wonder if we're going to ever get any details on that. I will also be fairly upset if we don't find out who is behind the Weasel testifying. Maybe we'll never find out. Maybe this is like a Pine Barren situation with the Russian or whatever.
No, I think it'll come out.
I hope so.
It's clearly motivated in part by spite. Someone is going to be taking credit for it.
I hope so. One episode of Succession Season 2 remains. We're looking forward to talking about it next week. Until then, Tara, where can people find more of your work on the internet?
You can hear me every Monday on Again With This, a podcast about Beverly Hills 90210, Melrose Place, and BH90210, The Reboot. You can also hear me every Wednesday on Extra Hot Great, a general interest TV podcast. Next week's topic is Press, a new miniseries that's come over from Britain that is airing on PBS. And we are talking to a person who's really worked at a newspaper, so that'll be very exciting and full of insights. And you can find all of my doings on my Twitter account at TaraAriano.
Find me on Twitter at Dave Chensky. That's Dave Chen, SKY. I also host an interview show called Culturally Relevant. You can find that wherever your podcasts are downloaded. You can find more episodes of this show, The Sweet Smell of Succession, at SuccessionPodcast.com. Email us at SuccessionPodcast@gmail.com. And also, this episode and this whole podcast were powered by Simplecast. Simplecast.com is where you can find great resources if you're starting your own podcast. Simplecast, check them out. And that's going to bring us to the end of this week's episode. We'll see you next week.